Når noen har holdt på I 200 år, da bør de kunne sakene sine. Vi reiser til Champagne. Hjertelig velkommen til en ny episode av Kjell Svinkjeller, og ikke minst Tom Amorati Løvås sin drinkfeed. Tom, I dag så skal vi skal inn I den hellige gral.
Den hellige gral, vi skal til kanskje et av de mest ikoniske vinområdene I verden, hvis jeg får lov å være så bøs. Vi skal ut I champagne.
Og du reus, du reus.
Ja, men det jo altså, herregud, vi snakker om bobler som har vært med å feire de største begivenhetene I verden siden ja, før Mjøsabanden, holdt jeg på
det. Ja, altså, ja, det det. Når det gjelder bobler, så det top of the pops. Og vi skal ha da snakke med en kar som jobber hos Joseph Perrier. Da tenker folk på vannet med en gang. Men det her skjønte vi at det var en onkel back in the days som hette et eller annet som skilte ut vannet. Og så satser de på bobler og koser seg og lager fest.
Nå blir det bobler. Og nå skal vi straks slå over på utenlandsk, på engelsk.
Ja, det fordi, håper jeg folk klar for.
Ja, for vår venn her, han ville helt slippe å prøve å snakke norsk.
Jeg spurte han om hvordan norsk lands var. Han sa han var ikke eksisterende. Så det var bra vi slapp inn av det. But welcome to our little podcast, Paul Edgar. Welcome to Norway.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here with you.
We are today going to taste some champagne. But basically, why do you think people like champagne that much?
That's a good that's a good question. I think first because it's good. I think it's a, you know very very good wine in general also because I think that for a long time now champagne has always been linked to very positive moments of life basically you get married you open a bottle of champagne you have a kid you open a bottle of champagne you celebrate something you know diploma or special moment in life so you open a bottle of champagne so I think that's why people really enjoy and like champagne
for the highlights in life
yeah. Definitely
but is it like something that you will enhance that you have you're going to follow up on that the champagne is for the special occasions or would you like to prefer people coming home from work one day very weary and they said well damn it today I really need something special I just open a bottle of champagne is are you afraid that it's too
only for the positive side
only for the luxurious yeah. Days of life
no I think that in the past it was really only that you know champagne was really linked for special occasion and celebrations today I think things are changing that now also people and I really invite people to do as you mentioned I mean it's also good champagne when you have a bad day something that you know cheer you up and definitely now I think also that the state of mind and philosophy is changing on champagne and the people start really to understand that this is basically wine that you have to open you know also for tasting and also to pair with food sometimes. I invite people also to do that because that's a very nice experience.
What should a normal Norwegian wine drinker think about when he's going to buy a bottle of champagne?
That's a good question. I think that they should first be curious. That's the main thing. I actually try to discover some new producer, some new houses, some special blends sometimes, you know, because we talk also a lot about sometimes about, you know, Blanc de Blanc also has a very positive image, I would say. And this is nice because it's also what we're going to taste together
lucky
today.
Lucky for us.
Yeah. But definitely also the good thing would be like to be curious to try to discover some other varieties and some other names I would say
yeah because basically you have one big company in champagne that are like 80% of the business and I always say don't always go there find a family owned thing and here we have a family owned thing sixth generation 200 years old
Definitely. So that's the, you know, perfect transition for that. No, but indeed, actually today I'm going to tell you more. I'm very happy for that, to tell you more about Joseph Perrier. So I'm going to make you discover this house or rediscover for people who already know
Joseph
Perrier.
This is a quite a new thing in Norway or a new wine for the Norwegian audience?
It's still in Norway, I would say unknown for the moment. But indeed, I mean, Joseph Perry has a wonderful history. You mentioned that already, like we are celebrating the 200 years this year, because we were created in 1825, created for sure by Joseph Perrier itself, and today, I mean, it's still a family-owned champagne house, because today Benjamin Faron, which is the current director, is the sixth generation of the family. And one particularity of Joseph Perrier, and this is, I think, also why we are in some ways still a bit unknown, is that we are not in the classical area in Champagne. Basically, when you come in Champagne, you visit Reims, you visit Epernay. Yep. And basically, us, we are the only champagne house you can find in Châlons-en-Champagne. So this is actually the third big city, I would say, in Champagne. So Châlons-en-Champagne, 30 kilometers in the east of Epernay. And we are there basically since 1827, almost from the beginning. And we decided to stay there because this is part of our identity. And I really invite people to come to Châlons-en-Champagne to discover this other part of the Champagne region. Also, because we decided to open our cellar to people only 5 years ago, which was not a long time ago, as you can imagine. But they did actually amazing works. Benjamin, he became actually the sixth generation in 2019. And he brought with him actually a new vision, a new philosophy for the house. Everything started, I think, with those works and the restructuration of the place, of the house we have in Châlons-en-Champagne. And we have also some amazing cellars with Gallo-Roman galleries that were actually created in the 4th century. This is also a reason why Joseph Perrier decided to buy this place, because it was an old post office, so with a lot of space. And basically behind there is, this is also a particularity of Joseph Perrier, of our cellar, but there is a hill behind the house. And basically when you go inside the cellar, you just enter the hill and you don't really go downstairs. So that's absolutely amazing to see. And there were already some galleries. And for sure, he decided to extend that to create today, like, I mean, we have 5 kilometers of galleries in this hill in Châlons-en-Champagne. So that's already for the I would say, the big history of Joseph Perrier. Another important point and date in our history was 1889, when actually Joseph Perrier became the champagne of the Queen Victoria.
Wow.
Royalty.
Yeah.
And this is why today, when you drink the Brut of Joseph Perrier, or today we are going to taste together the Blanc de Blanc, we talk about the Cuvée Royale. So this is actually a tribute that we pay to Queen Victoria. And for sure, this was a major moment, you know, in our history.
Yeah, that's a good commercial to have, to deliver to the British Emperor.
So that's again for the history of Joseph Perrier. And if we talk about the recent times, I would say that. So I said that there was this change of generation, 2019. Also, 2017 was important because we changed our cellar master. So that was also a major moment for us, because today our cellar master is called Nathalie Laplège, and she changed a tiny bit the style of the house, working a lot on freshness. So this is interesting, because now I can also talk about the style of Joseph Perrier. So what you should expect when you open a bottle of Joseph Perrier is basically that we work a lot on freshness. This is really the style we want to develop. We want to have. So only stainless steel to make our champagne. So this is true for the Brut. This is also true for the vintage and all the different cuvées. And basically when we want also to have extra complexity and fuller body champagne, we let that like longer time. We let the champagne longer time on the lees. Nathalie really developed this particular style. So yeah, freshness, very balanced champagne, and also very, very elegant, with a very fine and elegant bubbles also in this champagne. Yeah.
Maybe we should taste it so we can see if it's right.
Yeah, I just want to ask, well, maybe a silly question, but who is the people that are buying Joseph Pierre champagne? Is it, are you exporting a lot, or is it French inside France, or how are you evolving your markets?
So today, basically, we do like we sell 30% of the production in France, and 70% for sure export. So export market, actually, we really try to develop that, and we developed that over the past few years. We are very good, actually. If we talk about the export market, we are really good in the UK, for sure, with also this link that we have with the royal family. This is a market on which we are for a very long time now. We are also working well with Australia, with Japan, and in Europe. So we are also really good in Italy, for example.
So you are basically everywhere.
Yeah, we try. There is still some things to develop for sure, and we are working also actively on this. But yeah, we now you can find, I think, Joseph Pierre in all the continents.
How many bottles do you produce a year?
So we produce between 900,000 bottles a year and 1 million. So it's
big.
Yeah. But we are a champagne house, so that's also important, because now I can also talk about the terroir and the vineyards, basically, because we own 24 hectares of vineyards. So those vineyards, they are located mainly in the beginning of the Vallée de la Marne. So the majority of our vineyard is very close to Epernay. Basically, we have one village that is really important for Joseph Perrin, also the style of the house. It's Cumières. So Cumières, it's a premier cru village that is really close to Epernay. There we own like a bit more than 10 hectares of vineyards. And then we have also some vineyards in Auvillé, very known, also very famous for the Dom Pérignon Abbey. And then we have also some vineyards in Damery and Verneuil. So all those villages are in the Vallée de la Marne.
I know we're going to taste the Chardonnay.
And now we're going to taste the Chardonnay, absolutely.
Because people who are following us now, they have discovered that Kjell Gabriel is very eager. He opened the bottle and poured the glasses.
I'm ready. This is my work.
What are we supposed to look for on the nose?
Yeah, so here actually you will have a lot of citrusy notes. So it's the Blanc de Blanc is perfect because I was talking about the vineyards. We own also some hectares in Bassuet. Bassuet is a small village that you have in the Vitria. And when we talk about champagne, again, we always talk about the Montagne de Reims, the Côte des Blancs, the Vallée de la Marne. But basically, you have also another area that is really on the eastern limit of the region, that is called the Vitria. It's like, you know, vineyards that were planted in the 50s, more or less in the 60s. So it's quite recent. But there, they produce mainly some Chardonnay. And Chardonnay with a lot of freshness and a lot of citrusy notes. So you will feel a lot, you know, the lime, the lemon, the grapefruit. And here, as I said, so our style is really, really fresh. The objective is really to keep those characteristics of the variety, to keep those citrusy notes. So that's why also we let it between 2 and 3 years on the lees, in order to avoid a tiny bit, you know, the autolytic notes. So when you taste actually this Blanc de Blanc, you won't find the buttery or pastry notes.
They don't have the characteristic yeah. that we are binding with Chardonnay. They are, it's actually quite fresh, and then the acid is to die for. It's tremendous.
Yeah. Lime, citrus. Yeah.
High acidity. All the man said. Yeah. It's in there.
He knows.
I think he's tasted it before, maybe.
Not sure, I'm not sure.
But yeah. No, this was, as you said, very fresh.
Yeah.
Very, very, if you had to choose something to eat
With that, well, actually, as we are in Norway, actually, I will go with a very nice salmon. Fresh one. Also, smoked salmon. Actually, you can do something really great. I would try that also with a tartar, and some seafood. Actually, for sure, the freshness and the acidity is really perfect and match perfectly, you know, seafood and products from the sea in general. Yeah,
I agree. I always agree with people. No one knows what they're talking about, so it's quite easy. But
all you have to do is mention food, and you will agree to that.
It's something. Somebody said food. But the acidity here is quite unique. Is you said you don't have the. Since you don't have the oak thing, you get more into the real acidity of a fruit, and I think that's quite exciting.
Absolutely, and you really preserve, you know, as you say, the acidity and also the characteristic of the variety. Then
is this a result of the new cellar master and the new sort of direction she is taking you in? If I tasted this particular wine made 10 years ago, would I have the same impression at the time?
No, I think, and actually, it's also a personal point of view. I think that the style also of the Blanc de Blanc evolved over the past few years. So basically, we have two historical labels, and Joseph Perrier. So we have the Brut, and we have also the Blanc de Blanc, because we started to do this Blanc de Blanc in the 50s. And I think, with Nathalie, the style evolved a tiny bit. 10 years ago, it was a bit more on the buttery notes, pastry notes. And her, she really tried, you know, to keep, again, this freshness, to have this vibrant fruit and also very nice and elegant acidity. So I think, this is really the hand of Nathalie and the spirit of Nathalie we have in this glass.
The point can be hoping we look. We have this sheet here, and I always.
I was hoping that you could enlighten us for some. Some data like prices and stuff.
Oh, you want that? But I want. I have this sheet with all the different wines from this winery, and I also say you have a demi-sec.
We have a demi-sec. Yeah,
That's kind of strange, isn't it? Because not that many people drink demi-sec anymore.
You're right. You're right.
For the audience, it's the sweeter champagne, the old style champagne that they have, like in the beginning in 1825. Yep. I bet the whole thing was sec or demi-sec.
Yeah, definitely. But even I think that today the demi-sec we have today, I mean, basically it's 38 grams of sugar per liter. So again, for people, I mean, it's like the Brut, for example, it's always between 5 and 12 grams of sugar per liter. So demi-sec, yeah, for sure. Today, in the current standards, I mean, the demi-sec is like super sweet. But on the other hand, you mentioned the tradition. So I think it's also why we decided to keep the demi-sec, because this is part of the champagne history.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And this is still important to keep that today. Also, if then you think about in terms of food pairing, the demi-sec is always the best one for dessert, for sure.
I have to say that I just love a little bit of sweetness in the bubbles in the end of the meal. It's something to really wrap it up.
Who's the consumer of the demi-sec? Is it the old people that want to remember the good old times? Or is it because the new audience, when I talk about champagne doing classes and stuff, I talk about, oh, back in the days it was sweet, but nobody drinks it anymore.
You're right.
They do. Or you produce it. But
we
maybe
produce it. Actually, we don't sell a lot of demi-sec. I don't want to hide anything, but that's the reality. I mean, we don't. There is not a particular profile of the demi-sec consumer. But we decided anyway to keep that. And just to mention, you mentioned actually the past, actually 100 years ago, and we still have that in our archives. Basically, the champagne was more around like 100 and 150 grams of sugar per liter. Like it was very, very sweet. So even, I mean, today in the classification we have, that would be like a doux, champagne doux. But this was the standard before.
Yeah, this wine is, of course, it's champagne, so it's cost now 590 kroners. It's a family-owned thing, so I think it's...
Well, actually, after tasting this particular wine, I'm not scared for the price. I think you get value for money, and I mean... It's just champagne, as you said. It's you're not drinking something from Spain or other obscure country, right? Then,
so obscure country. Thank you. Spain is the obscure country.
Could be worse. Could be worse.
It could be worse. But thank you so much for coming, Paul-Edgar.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy your stay here in Norway. And of course, I think you need to send some bottles up to our royal family as well.
Yeah, I will. And just a few words just to end that. So thank you again for your time. And again, I mean, we are celebrating the 200 years. So for sure, I just say to all Norwegian people that we are waiting for you in Chalon en Champagne, also to visit the cellar.
Is it possible to stay at your...
Not yet.
Not yet.
not yet, but we, I mean, there are a lot of accommodations all around the place and in Chalon. So that's not, this is not a problem.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. That was gøy.
Ja.
Det er alltid gøy med nye ting og nye bekjentskaper og nye mennesker og ikke minst nye viner. Og det er klart, Josef Perrier har ikke vært veldig kjent I Norge frem til nå.
Det er helt for oss nytt, selv om det 200 år gammel. Men jeg må si syre her, altså dette ja, må du elske.
Jeg bare elsker det, jeg sitter her og smiler.
Ja, du jo så godt humør at det her sjelden sett det så glad.
Du sitter og ler høyt. Nei, det var en veldig gøy opplevelse, fordi Blonde Blanc kan jo ha en tendens til å være veldig sånn chardonnay-ette. Ja. Mange faller litt av på akkurat den akkurat derfor, men den har jo ikke det. Den har ikke disse notene som man snakket om, smørgreiene og fleskete tingene og oljet og sånn. Den var ikke det helt tatt. Det var
bare kul, den. Og så han smilte, jeg så ikke, dette podcast, folk ser jo ikke folk, men da jeg nevnte da denne demisekken, så han ordentlig, da våknet han til liv, det synes jeg var gøy.
Du måtte jo snakke om en annen vin enn den vi smakte, selvfølgelig.
Jo, men det bare som et eksempel, men, at det finnes, at I gamle burde... dager så var det søt.
Og det burde vi egentlig lage en egen episode om.
Ja, får vi tak I disse demisekkene?
Det vet jeg ikke, men vi kan jo spørre kollegaer
her. Han må sende opp noen flasker til oss. Vi ordner det.
Skal vi runde av? Dette var Stas, Josef Perrier, Blanc de Blanc.
590 norske kongelige kroner for Blanc de Blanc. Det finnes rimeligere varianter også, men det så vidt jeg ser. Så jeg inne på kongelige norske vinmonopol.
Men det bare å sjekke ut Polen. De har jo alt mulig annet rart også.
3, 4, 5. 5 ser det ut som det inne I hyllene som prøver å lokke frem. Men jeg likte også bare sånn avslutningsvis. Jeg likte det han sa, at husk at det en stor familie, eller det Louis Vuitton-familien, som eier stort sett 80% av all champagne. Finn et familiehus, det pleier jeg alltid å si på når jeg holder boblekurs. Finn et familiehus, finn de hyggelige folka som har holdt på med dette her I 6 eller 12 eller 14 generasjoner.
Ja, du vil slå et slag for å ta bort storindustrien på noe.
ja, jeg vil kanskje slå et slag for at vi trenger ikke å drikke Moët Chardot og alle disse dyste...
Jeg er helt enig, og jeg tenker at... vet du hva? Vi stopper der, folk kan tenke selv. Så sier vi bare tusen takk fra Tom og Merat til Løvås I Drinkfeed.
Og takk fra Kjell Gabel Henrik I Kjell Svinkjeller, og hyggelig at dere tenker selv.